1-800-449-8686. And now, Phil Hendry.
John Preston, the filmmaker, is with us. John, tell us about the movie that you're making now.
Well, the story, Phil, first of all, I want to say I don't make race movies. I'm an African-American, but I don't see myself as a black filmmaker necessarily. I don't make race movies like Spike Lee. I make movies about people and people's relationship. And the story is a true story. It's based on my life. It's a story about the rekindled love of a father for his daughter. It's a beautiful story of family and family reconciliation. And it's set in contemporary times. It's a story that starts with a father who leaves his young daughter, and basically he has abandoned her. And then we flip forward a few years to her search for this man. She has found out, you know, that she is not, she has found out that she has a father out there, and she's looking for him.
All right.
So now it's 20 years later, and she finds this man. And then I think the story takes on some very significant drama, which is the two of them are trying to get to know each other again. And they really never did because she was very small when he left. She was only 4. And I think, Phil, the lovely part of this and the twist on this is that they eventually fall in love with each other. And they eventually do get together and they have a child together. So now the story changes about a couple who are father and daughter, and yet they have fallen in love and they have had a child and all the prejudice that they face. Okay?
All right, I'm listening to you. I mean, I...
Well, but just listen all the way. So I had 3 professional screenwriters look at my story, and each one of them told me the story was very original, and yet I have had 3 Hollywood studios pass on this story. Now, it was if I was a white man and sent this in, that would have been picked up.
Well, the story about a father and daughter falling in love is a little unusual. It's a story about incest, isn't it?
No, this is a family reuniting. No, you have to understand, they have not seen each other for over 20 years. So when this man left this girl, you see it.
What was she, 4?
She was 4 years old, yeah. So she don't even remember seeing this man. And so he finally comes back into their life. So it's a family reuniting, facing life together after a very tragic parting when she was young.
But it's got incest in it.
No, it doesn't. Let me explain it. Because they have not seen each other in 20 years, they don't even know each other. They meet as strangers. And the fact that he is a daughter really doesn't mean nothing. I mean, the first thing he notices about her is her beauty. And he's turned on for her. And gradually this passion, and that turns to love.
And she shares the passion?
Well, not at first. At first she's unsure.
Okay.
And one night, he has too much to drink, and he sort of forces himself on her. And this is a very passionate scene in the movie, and very, very crucial, because this is when she allows herself for the very first time to be loved. Because this girl has never loved before. And this man has too much to drink. And he forces himself on her on a ping pong table or something downstairs in this rumpus room they've got. All right?
Okay.
And so now she finally gives in to this man, and they fall in love.
Okay, John Preston is with us, one of the top young filmmakers. This is not being picked up at the studio because, in your opinion, there is a racist attitude?
Well, I think racism still exists in a very, very significant way at all the Hollywood studios. And you only have to take a look at the movies, just like in the National Football League or the NBA, how many black head coaches do they have? How many African Americans are there working in the film industry right now, the television industry right now? Very, very few. And this is a movie that is about a reunited family, and yet because I'm black, I can't get this movie made. And that, to me, is racism. And right now, with America rushing to war, everybody, you know, all they want to do is go over and kill people of color in Iraq or people of color in these other places. And I come up with a beautiful story like this, and it is not made because of the racism inherent in the Hollywood system. That's why I use platforms like your radio show and other radio shows I've been on to get the message out.
All right, John Preston with us. And the film, as yet untitled project, is a story about a father and daughter who reunite and eventually fall in love with each other. Are they biological father and daughter?
Yes, they are. He is the father of this child, and he leaves this girl. And she's left with his mother, who is a crack whore and an alcoholic, and she's a prostitute. And this child finally breaks away to find some real decent love. And finally, she goes looking for her father, and she finds him.
All right. She goes looking for her father, finds him. Then, according to your script, they fall in love, they have a child, and the real turn of the movie is facing the prejudice that they have to face because...
Well, so number one, because they are father and daughter, but mostly because they're black. You know, that's the problem. Nobody wants these black people to move in because it's a neighborhood that has been white for a long time. They do have some Koreans and these kind of people who are accepted as white people, but mostly they're not accepted because they're black.
All right. And I understand, John, I don't want to keep harping on this, but this is a father and a daughter.
Let me explain to you, Mr. Henry, I know what you're trying to say, why this is not incest.
All right.
Okay. This man has not seen her for 20 years.
Okay.
So she does not even remember what he looks like.
All right.
Now he finds this girl. And there's comedy, too, when they first meet, because he says to her, you know, the last time I saw you, your chest was a lot smaller, you know. So there's like a little bit of a humorous way of breaking the ice, which she's not sure how to take that. But I think it gives the audience a little bit of a laugh. And then they go on to explore each other and to find each other.
All right, John Preston with us. The movie is about a father and daughter who reunite and eventually fall in love and move in together. And you can't get it made because you are claiming, and I'm not saying that you're lying, you're just claiming that there, because of the racism still prevalent in Hollywood.
Without question, sir. Without question. And I know that I can tell by the sound of your voice you don't believe, what I'm saying.
It's not that I don't believe what you're saying. I'm still kind of thinking about the script of the story you're trying to pitch. Let me give our phone number out, 1-800-449-8686, 1-800-449-8686, The Phil Henry Show. John Preston is a great young director, and we've had him on the program before. He's done Mabel's Decision, which was an outstanding movie about race prejudice in the 80s in America. And the movie that you're doing now is about, I think it's an unusual love story. Would you give me that it's an unusual love story?
No, I think that it's nothing unusual about it, Phil, other than that a young girl finally finds her father, and they reunite and are able to create a family based on that. Most kids that go looking for their parents, who they have not known since they were babies, they find they have nothing in common with these people. And they find, in many cases, that they don't want to have nothing to do with them, or the parent don't want to have nothing to do with them. In this case, you have a father and daughter who do find commonality. And they do find, plus, you have to understand, for those people who think we're talking about incest, it's like, in a lot of ways, it's like a statute of limitations. After 20 years, a father and daughter, if they have never met, and that's all I'm saying, if they have never met, they could have sex, and it's not incest, because incest is with fathers with little daughters, or they still know each other. You see?
So you're claiming that this is not an incestuous relationship based on the fact that they don't know each other, or at least haven't seen each other for 20 years.
I should not have to explain that, but if anybody feels uneasy about that, what I'm trying to say is this is based, first of all, this is based on a true story, and it's based on the fact that love can conquer anything, no matter what. And that's what I think, that's the message that I want to give here.
All right, can I ask you something? In one scene, the father has too much to drink and forces himself sexually on the daughter. She resists.
That is correct, yeah.
And she resists, you say, because she's never known love, so she doesn't trust it.
She doesn't trust the love that this man wants to give to her, you know, and because she's been hurt before. But now she's opening up. She says, you know, this is all right, you know, whatever, it feels good or whatever. So they get it on, and they have a child. They decide to marry, and they move in. I think it's a story for the ages. I think it's a story that is going to, for people that can get it. See, most people don't get love like this. They don't understand how love can conquer time. Most people don't get that. That's why I made the movie, to teach people that. But because of the racism in Hollywood today, I can't make a movie about a father and daughter who love each other so much that they would have a baby together, even if he, you know, forced himself sexually on her, on the floor of the living room or whatever. It turns out good.
All right, 1-800-449-8686. Is racism still alive in Hollywood? Talking with John Preston, one of the great, bright, young film directors in Hollywood today. He is African-American. I say that only by way of explaining his take on... excuse me for a minute, my headphones fell out. His take on what he perceives to be a racist environment in Hollywood. The new film, it's an untitled project about a father and a daughter and how they fall in love after not seeing each other for 20 years. They have a baby, move into a neighborhood, and there's prejudice. And he forces himself on her after drinking one night. She's resisting him because she's never known true love. Now, I want to ask you honestly, and I should have asked John this, but I will when we get back. Doesn't that sound like it's rape? As opposed to she's just not trusting his love? And on top of that, it's a father who's had too much to drink. 1-800-449-8686, Phil Hendry Show.
The Phil Hendry Show, 1-800-449-8686. Pure exhibitionism.
Henry Show is back. 1-800-449-8686.
All right, we're back with John Preston, a young filmmaker. John, you've got a very controversial script about a man and a daughter who a father and daughter who reunite after not seeing each other for 20 years. He forces himself sexually on her. They fall in love and get married. Now you say this isn't incest. You say it isn't rape. Why is that?
Well, Phil, you know, I would have to get into a whole sociological history with you to explain to you why this is not rape. It's only rape if the person is surprised or if the person is taken by surprise. If you're having drinks with the person and you enjoy the evening and all of a sudden, you know, he wants to get a taste or whatever you want to call that, that's not rape, you know. And besides, she wound up enjoying it, you know. But the other thing, it's not incest because... how is he supposed to know, you know, in other words, if he was living with his daughter every day, that would be nasty, but he's not. It's like the first time he has seen her in 20 years, and she looks pretty good, you know, and like he says in the line, there's one line in the script, he said, the last time I saw you, your chest was a lot smaller, you know, and he's laughing about that, a whole lot smaller, you know, and he's laughing about that, because, and that's the joke that breaks the ice between them. You know, that eventually breaks the ice between them.
All right, 1-800-449-8686. John Preston with us. Let's go to Brenda. Hi, Brenda. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Hi. Let me start by saying that I, too, am African-American, and I agree that racism still lurks in our society. However...
absolutely.
However, what this man is talking about, you know, if any of us believe in any kind of God, then... the issues that he is putting forth are morally reprehensible. First of all, if a father and son, a biological father and son, haven't seen each other in 100 years, they are still biologically father and son.
I'm not talking about sex with a son. I'm talking about with the daughter.
I mean, they're still biologically father and daughter. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I excuse the mistake there. I'm so passionate about
well,
this.
Well, that's where you misunderstood me. See, that's why you don't
no,
understand.
No. I understood it with the daughter.
It's okay with the daughter. With the son, that would be homosexuality, which I
don't believe. No. Wait a minute. I just, in the passion,
that'd
I said
gay.
Son.
That'd be gay.
I said, okay, well, hear me out. In my passion, I said son, but I know you're talking about a daughter. Excuse my slip of the tongue there. I still will say, whether it is a father and daughter or a father and son for that matter, it is still morally reprehensible that any parent would have sexual relationships with their child, whether they have seen that child 1 year ago or 500 years ago.
Right.
Secondarily, you are talking about rape. Rape is inexcusable. I don't care who enjoyed it or whatever.
Right.
The father got drunk, he raped his daughter. The father got... had a child with his daughter and is talking about living with his daughter.
You don't
that is morally reprehensible under any circumstances.
See, that's a beautiful story, isn't it?
It is not a beautiful story. It's morally reprehensible.
Well, I'd like the caller, if I could, to and I understand that, see, I'm a filmmaker, and I don't know what you do for you. You may not understand how I construct my art and how I put that to film. If you could tell me by point what it is you object to, what
yes.
I think is a very beautiful story.
Okay, well, let me tell you what I object to.
Okay.
I object to a father sleeping and having sex with his daughter under any circumstances.
Oh, but see, that's not really.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. You asked me. Let me answer.
Yes, ma'am.
I object to a father raping his daughter, even if he, as you fictionalize in the movie, she enjoyed it. You know, that's reprehensible. We have, and this is one time I commend Hollywood for not. Making a movie of something so morally reprehensible. If you believe, if there is any kind of God, this is a sin. It is just totally unbelievable that you would try to apply racism to an issue that is so human.
Well, Brenda,
any human being, regardless of race.
I'd like to say, Phil, if I could.
Go ahead.
I have a word for a female who generally we call the male. Uncle Tom, I call her Aunt Antoinette, you know, because, are you there, ma'am?
I'm still here.
Yeah. See, because you're playing to the white man's, desire for us. You know what I'm saying? So, in other words, you say it's not racism. Oh, come on, you know it is racism. That's a beautiful story of a man and a woman.
He got drunk and he forced sex on this woman.
Yeah, but she liked it. She liked it.
You know what? Unfortunately, women who have been, I mean, that's been the tagline for rapists for years, that she was asking for it.
But that was her father.
Or she enjoyed it.
That was her father.
But set that aside. It's her father. I don't know how you could justify. Let me ask you a question.
Beautiful. That's beautiful. Don't you think that's beautiful?
No,
I don't. Father and a daughter having sex.
Oh, my God, sir.
No. Let me ask you a question.
I'm a father of a daughter, and I wouldn't think it's beautiful at all.
It's a beautiful
story. No, and may I make one more point?
Yes, go ahead.
Let me make one more point. You made another comment that was just totally unbelievable. You said incest only applies if it's a young child. So if a father rapes his 16-year-old or his 18-year-old or his 24-year-old daughter, it's not incest.
Well, what if she enjoys it? See, and
it
again,
does not matter.
This is based
if
on a true.
She enjoyed it.
See, this is based on a true story. All right, because
what do you mean true story?
I said it's based on my life. Because
you raped your daughter and you're trying to justify it.
No, ma'am, I did not rape my daughter. You know, she liked it. I had too much to drink. It was actually not booze. I had smoked some crack, which I do not do anymore, and I've completely put that away in my life.
You know, I hope the police are listening and that they come get you.
Well, how? She was 24 years old.
You know, that it doesn't matter to
do
me.
That?
It doesn't
matter
to me.
Wait a minute. You were smoking crack and you forced sex on your 24-year-old daughter.
But then we had a baby together. And,
well, where is she now?
Well, we got divorced.
You got divorced?
Hey, you married your daughter.
Well, see, ma'am, that's what I mean. You are getting a kick out of this because it is a fun movie. And
no,
it is a movie
no. My kick is just
people
totally,
can have fun
totally,
with
it. I am totally appalled by this. And don't take that humor in any way at all, condoning this. I am laughing at how totally, either naive or ignorant or whatever you want to call it, that you are sounding right now when you make comments like that.
Man,
it's
totally
I'm
a filmmaker. I'm a filmmaker in Hollywood. Now, she's not going to press charges against me because I didn't, no rape, no charges, you know. But you respect family? Because this is what it's about, creating a family. And
yeah, but then you guys wind up getting divorced, and in your script, they live happily ever after.
Yeah.
Because that's what the white man wants me to do. You know, he wants me to tell the truth about the black man, but he don't want to tell the truth about the white man. See, yeah, we got divorced. This is a white script. This is a script that white people will like. Because
well, you know what?
Brenda, I'm sorry. I got a break. I appreciate every intelligent and cogent comment you've made. Thank you. 1-800-449-8686. 1-800-449-8686. Phil Henry Show.
One 1-800-449-8686. The Phil Henry Show is back.
I'm sorry, John. We're back. Phil Henry Show with John Preston, filmmaker. His film is a would you call it autobiographical, John?
You know, it has elements of my autobiography. It's got elements of scenes that I have seen in my life, elements that I've written. What my movie, more than anything else, Phil, shows you is how the love of a father for a daughter is so strong that he will take her as his lover to protect her from the scum and the abusers and the drug addicts that she encounters every day. So even if he has to take her as a lover and have her, you know, bear his child, and they live together, you know, that is that worse than her falling in with, like, a drug addict or something like that? Or in a very proud culture, you know, what would be better? You know, would she go off and marry some bum or stay with her father? And
you mentioned that you thought this was a story that white audiences would appreciate.
Oh, absolutely, yes, sir.
Why?
Well, because it has elements in it that I think white audiences would understand. I think the fact that a father, you know, would get up close to his daughter like that, a lot of whites do that. I mean, that is very common in the white culture, you know.
Wait a minute, incest?
No, I don't call that incest.
All right, a father having sex with his daughter is common in the white culture.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. In fact, that's why I said what I said at the beginning. I am not making movies about race. I'm not making movies about black people. I make movies for everybody. And that's why this movie is for more than just black people. It's for white people, primarily, really, because white people understand how it is for a man when he falls for his daughter and want to have sex with her and live with her and everything, you know, and how he might have too much to drink or whatever, and maybe, you know, on a night, whatever. She may be my daughter, but I have not seen her in 20 years, so why don't we just get together and get it on, you know, and like that. See, whites, they know that.
And you know, it's kind of an insult to white people, I got to tell you.
Oh, I see. So as long as I'm only talking about black people, it's all right. Then
No, it's an insult. If you're saying that this is a racial characteristic, it's an insult to anybody that you would attribute it to.
No, you already tripped yourself up, Phil. You said whites, it's an insult. You didn't say it's an insult to blacks.
John, I'm not tripping myself up. I think you understand what I'm saying. 1-800-449-8686. 1-800...
No, I do not understand what you're saying.
Hold on. 1-800-449-8686. Here is Sheila. Go ahead, Sheila.
This whole deal with your question as far as whites enjoying this is totally misleading and wrong. And you are being a racist even saying this.
Well, no, I said I made
Brenda
it
was
white,
very
white
good and
you know.
Very intelligent on this line.
Unusual for a black woman, isn't it?
Unusual? No.
Well,
She's a person. She's a human being.
Well, you about
sir,
to say
you can't
a,
be
sir,
this illiterate to think that any person, black or white, sir, any person, black or white, it doesn't matter. This is not something someone would enjoy seeing, even your own daughter, that you ruined her life because you raped her when you were on drugs.
No, it's a love story.
No,
it's
sir, that's
story.
Not love. That's
and,
a sickness, sir.
And you're the
one that needs help, and you will destroy your daughter and your grandchild or your child. I don't know if this is the mother's father's sister's brother.
What about the statute of limitations?
Sir, there is none on that.
Yes, there is.
There is none,
yes, there
sir.
Is. I'm afraid
and
I
you're making
yes,
this an issue against blacks and whites, and you're wrong.
No, it's not. It's about how.
No, sir, you are wrong.
Everybody loves it. You know, everybody want to have
no,
it.
No, sir, no one would pay to see this.
1-800-449-8686. Here is Eliza, is it, or Elisa?
Alyssa,
go ahead.
First of all, I have a question for you, Mr.
That lady was wrong because... she did not know what she's talking about.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead, ma'am.
Can I ask you a question, Mr. Preston?
Yes, ma'am.
Were you abused, sexually molested as a child?
No, I was not.
Okay. First of all, I have a hard time.
Did you have sex with one of your parents?
Yes, I did.
You did?
You weren't sexually abused, but you had sex with one of your parents.
With my mother, yes. It was beautiful. There was nothing wrong with it.
Okay.
Absolutely lovely.
Okay, well, that explains it.
Wait a minute. Are you going to disrespect my mother? Because I have to stop you if you're going to do that.
I'm not disrespecting your mother. I'm just trying to find an early event in your life that would shape the way that you're thinking right now?
This young lady falls in love with her father after he keeps her locked in a closet during her pregnancy because he does not want to shame her. You see what I'm saying?
Don't you think that there are other ways you can love your children besides having sex with them?
That's the best expression of love. Put it to him good.
Did your child come out normal?
Jesus.
Did your child come out normal and healthy?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, well,
right now he's a member of the Miami Heat.
Okay, well, to give you a little bit of insight in these types of relationships.
Yes, ma'am.
Children that are born a lot of children who are born out of sexual relationships like this come out genetically deformed.
No, that's not true. That's not true.
Excuse me.
No, it's not true, ma'am.
I work in a medical facility where our babies are the result.
Then how come how come my son plays in the NBA?
Well, it doesn't always happen,
How come it doesn't happen?
I'm a medical professional.
Well, in other words, change bedpans, or what do you do? I mean, a medical professional, what's that mean? So you give flu shots?
She works in a hospital.
Facility where there are chronically ill children born with genetic disorders because their parents are in the same family.
See, everybody's doing it.
The children come out. And I can't believe you would even make this a racial issue.
Are you a
baby sitter? It has nothing to do with black and white.
No, it doesn't.
It has
to do
with the fact that you're a sick individual who's rationalizing this kind of behavior.
I'm just saying that white people seem to like this kind of movie more. That's all.
I don't know any white person who would like that kind of movie.
Well, because most of the people that have that kind of relationship are white. And so,
look, can we get off of that, all right? I mean, already you're accusing Hollywood of racism, and now you're telling me that... What do you mean your son plays in the NBA?
He does. Yes, I told you. If you watch my movie, ma'am, you will love it. You'll laugh.
I would never think
you'll go out of the movie
watching your movie.
I wanted a PG rating on this, and that was the other argument I got into with other...
How could you honestly expect a PG rating on a film like this?
Mr. Henry, because I was naive enough to believe that Hollywood would believe in a love story. And that it would be a story for the whole family. A story you could take...
The whole family! Father has sex with his daughter, rapes her on a pool table. The whole family, huh?
You know something? It is not graphic. There's no nudity. Nothing like that. Hey, let me ask you something, Eliza, because I bet you saw my fat Greek wedding. Is that right?
Actually, no, I did not see that wedding, that movie.
And the other thing that I told them we could do this thing animated if they didn't want to do it live action.
Your movie will never be produced to large audiences.
What if we did it animated?
What do you mean?
Animated?
Animated?
The concept is the same.
I beg pardon, ma'am?
The concept, animated or not animated,
it would be
animated,
even more ghoulish.
Same six subjects.
Okay, what about that Greek wedding?
What about it?
Oh, they got all these Greeks performing every kind of sex act. But
on their own children?
I didn't see it, okay?
I don't know if it's on their own children, but... Greek people do all that nasty, nasty stuff, and they had that movie, and everybody's going to see it.
Nasty stuff? I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I'm talking about, you know what I'm talking about, animals.
No.
With animals.
I didn't see the movie.
Yes, ma'am, with animals.
Look, people of all different races and religions do nasty, disgusting things.
Can I ask you a question, ma'am? I bet you if Disney made this movie, you'd go see it. I bet you if
Disney.
Yeah.
Disney.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, If Disney made this movie, you'd go see it.
Well, you know what? Disney would never make this freaking movie, all right?
What if we animate it?
What do you mean if you animate it? It would be the most ghoulish thing seeing a cartoon character rape another one. Ghoulish!
What if we used, fun cartoon characters?
Well, what do you mean?
What if, the father is if the father's Mickey Mouse and the daughter's Daffy Duck?
So Mickey Mouse is raping Daffy Duck?
Right. Father could be a superhero or something.
Bug off.
You a racist, man. What if we had pigs and birds flying around? Or when Porky Pig is taking Elmer Fudd from behind it.
Thanks to George Carlin. 1-800-449-8686. Phil Henry Show.
The Phil Henry Show. 1-800-449-8686. We eat kittens. Henry Show. 1-800-449-8686.
By the way, that was me doing the voice of John Preston, the young black film director. This is The Phil Henry Show, and our website is philhenryshow.com. If you'd like to know more about our show, that's a great place to start. And there's also fun little trinkets and knickknacks you can pick up in our souvenir shop. And also, the best thing is get a backstage pass. You have access to all of our classic audio from years gone by. We have a 30-day archive that also archives all of our shows. The 27th and the 28th of this month, The Phil Henry Show will be on stage at the Aspen Comedy Festival in Aspen, Colorado, the HBO Comedy Arts Festival there. We'll be doing a couple of hours live on stage from Aspen, and if you're in the area, in the Aspen area, come on over and take a look at us. 1-800-449-8686. This is The Phil Henry Show. You know, the rape thing, all of a sudden something triggered in my head. That's kind of like what we're going through with Iraq. If you follow my logic, here's how my sick mind thinks. The United States is kind of like a woman who walks down a street wearing very provocative clothing, is then dragged into an alley and raped. And then the people say, well, you were asking for it. So therefore, the intimation is, you have no right to seek justice. Because when we got hit on 9/11, everybody said, well, not everybody, but the people who are against us doing anything about it said, you're asking for it. So therefore, you don't have any right to seek justice. Just like a woman who's been raped. How about that one, huh? Try that one at a party, especially if Barbara Streisand's there. All right. 1-800-449-8686. I was reading this in Le Monde. Le Monde is the French newspaper in Paris. And I don't know whether you know this or not, but there is a boycott now that is a brewing. Remember when we talked about it 2 weeks ago and I said, what the hell would we boycott because they ain't got nothing? Well, now there's a guy in what do they call it? Congress. And he wants to boycott French stuff. And I'm thinking, well, whoa, what the hell have they got? It turns out this guy dug up all kinds of swill that we import from them. In starting with all that lousy water, you know that Perrier? Oh, that stuff, the stuff that tastes like urine. How would I know? Don't ask. Perrier. We import that jive from those cats. We import wine. We import cheese. There's stuff that we import, and I had the list, and I'll break it out for you here in a second. But that's not a bad idea if you just do your part for America and you do your part for the Allies in this very righteous war to avenge our dead on 9/11. If you just stop buying all that bad, dung-smelling cheese from the French, and especially wine, because many of you may not know this. As a matter of fact, how many Americans buy French wine? I guess people who are very in the know. I don't know, the average American does not buy French wine. But all of you people with your nose shoved up in the air, why don't you stop buying that frog stuff, too, and start buying the real good American stuff, the real good American red eye that comes from, you got it, our very own beautiful slopes of Napa. Napa, Sonoma, Mendocino. See ya. Great stuff. Also, upstate New York sells a very nice Riesling. Also, Georgia. Georgia has some very nice vineyards. I went to a chateau there once, and it was an elegant chateau, and I sat down. The guy said, you want something like to eat, or do you want to get right into the drinking? And I said, that's great. Of course he didn't. That's such a stereotype, but in point of fact, some of those stereotypes are true. You know, there's stereotypes, and then there's stuff that just does happen, so I don't have to tell you. Wine. Great stuff in America. You don't need that. Cheese? What about California, Wisconsin? The French got nothing we want. Don't buy any of that stuff anymore. You got it? Now, what else, Janice? Here it is. Americans smell a rat in French export products. Now, making stickers orange on French wine would warn us that the wine is from France because the French, in order to give the wine color, do you know what they use? Bovine blood. We don't do that in the States, see? Because our wine is so pure, and it's just like it was poured right out of a baby's rear end. It's just as sweet as the day it was made. And that frog stuff, they mix cow's blood with. Now, they also have in France. Cheese, as I mentioned. What else? Is that it? Wine and cheese? Where's the other stuff? Where's the other stuff? Is this it? So they only got wine and cheese and water? There's a $32 billion food business that's going on between the United States and France. What else are we getting from them people? Tell you what, start drinking Italian Chianti. If you don't want to drink any of the California or New York stuff, start drinking some of that Italian Chianti. Now, the Italians, they're down with us. They are on our side. They're right there lockstep with us with those helmets and those big feathers that stick out of the top. They're going to be great. By the way, the French said this. You may be interested to know this because you think that I'm just saying this stuff because I want to hear myself talk. And frankly, I don't really care because I like hearing myself talk, especially when it comes to this kind of stuff. But here's how the French reacted to this. This is what they said when told the United States is pondering a boycott of French products. There is no chance for it to go very far, says Emmanuel Gagnère, press attaché at the French embassy in Washington. It's so far away from the actual debate, I don't think it's something the Bush administration is ready to do. And he's probably right about that. The Bush administration is probably not ready officially to ask for a boycott of French goods. We ain't talking about the Bush administration, though, Mr. Gagné. We're talking about Americans taking it into their own hands and deciding that they're just not going to buy French products. Now, you ask yourself why. It probably was said very clearly by Representative Jim Saxon of New Jersey when he said, the whole thing mystifies me. When they were in need in two world wars, we were there to help. A lot of American blood was lost on French soil defending that country. We and other countries should expect help from the Allies. In point of fact, 135,000 men of foreign birth lay interned there in Normandy. Now, the French guy responded to that by saying, yes, Americans fought for freedom in Europe. Much too many died. It's a pity, but it's not the problem now. Everything's different. We don't have to fall behind the U.S. and do whatever it wants. Is it a pity? It's a pity. It's not a pity. It's a crime. That's what it is, Mr. Gagné. It's not a pity. It's a crime. It's a crime that 60 years later we would ask for a little bit of help from you guys, the French, and you want to turn around like you usually do, show us that big, bright yellow stripe and run away. That big, bright, cheese yellow stripe you got running up your back and trot away and go hobnob with the fat Belgians or Belgians or Belgians. The Belchman, I think that's what they're called, really. You know what a Belgian's called, really? A Belchman. 1-800-449-8686. Forget it.
The Phil Hendry Show. 1-800-449-8686. Pure exhibitionism.
Show is back. 1-800-449-8686.
How is Hollywood going to handle the current crisis with Iraq? How is the people in the know? The hell is that? Is that a dentist drill I'm hearing? Excuse me for just a moment, folks. Ah, yes. Perfect. Take two. How is Hollywood going to handle the current crisis in Iraq? I was at the Entertainment Writers Luncheon today. I talked to Margaret Gray, and she has agreed to join us on the program today. And you're over at the commissary right now at Fox, I know, Margaret, but I wanted to ask you, what is the primary focus when we're talking about America's preparation for war and the high alert?
Well, Phil, I think we're all thanking God, first of all, that we live in Los Angeles and that this city will not be any primary focus for any targeted terror attack. We are a city that is immune in so many ways, but we do fear for other people in this country. And we want to stay in touch with everyone around the country as the potential, and I think we need to underline that word, Phil, potential for terror occurs.
All right, why are we not at risk in Los Angeles? Because we obviously, there's no military?
No, the fact is, Phil, Los Angeles is a film and television center. And film and television are probably our very best ambassadors in this country. You can say what you want about people the world over and what they think of our country, but everyone knows that American film and American television is loved worldwide, whether it is Baywatch or any of these other programs, action movies, Sylvester Stallone films. The very interesting thing, and I know you read it on the air the other day, Phil, Saddam Hussein himself is said to be a fan of American popular culture, American films, American music.
Absolutely.
And so that means that the United States, as a country, has a pocket where terror is very unlikely to occur, and that is Los Angeles. And all we can do here in Los Angeles is wait and hope and keep our fingers crossed that all of the other people out there that are listening to you right now in all of the other cities and all of the other towns hope that they aren't hit and hit very hard. Because I know, Phil, you're currently on the air in San Francisco. And
yes, so we have a new affiliate in San Francisco, KNEW, and we're very certainly grateful for that.
Well, you can well imagine if, and this is a very big if, the terrorists decide to hit the Golden Gate Bridge as it's burning and falling into the bay, all we can do is watch that on television. There isn't a lot we can do for the people in San Francisco. So I came up with the idea, along with Hal Steinberg, who I work with over at Clear Line Productions. What if people could call us here in L.A. and we could share their fear with them? In other words, if you're living in Chicago, if you're living in San Francisco, God forbid they hit New York again. If you're living in any of the St. Louis, where there's the Arch, Detroit, where there is the Renaissance Towers, any one of these cities, and you are hit by a terrorist attack, you could call California or call someone in California and share the fear, and we in turn could share with you. And that's why we would like to make available some cell phone numbers and things like that before the end of the program.
All right, Margaret Gray is on the line with us. I think the most interesting thing that you're saying here is that Los Angeles will be immune to any terror attack because of the movie business.
Absolutely, Phil. I think that this is common knowledge, not only among people who live here, but I think the Department of Defense would tell you the same thing. I think President Bush, Donald Rumsfeld, I'm sure that there is a contingency that they're very clear on. I think really the terror protection is going on in Washington and New York and these other cities. You saw the anti-aircraft batteries on the front page of the newspaper.
Well, that was chilling to see that in America, in our country, in our great country, to see anti-aircraft batteries standing next to the Washington Monument. But you know what? That's the way it is, baby. That's the price of freedom, man. I mean,
well, absolutely, Phil. I couldn't agree with you more. Thank God we live in Los Angeles, where the terrorists wouldn't dare hit us. They just wouldn't dare. Because if, for whatever reason, Al-Qaeda, Hamas, or any of the millions of terror organizations that form this nexus of evil, if you will, if they made the mistake of attacking Los Angeles with a terror attack, the cultures of the Arab world would literally, I believe, be in upheaval, because that means they would be jeopardizing American films and American television, and those people over there who have nothing, who look for their dinner in a garbage can, the only thing they have to look forward to is to turn their television set on and see American culture like a very hopeful wave from afar coming through their television set.
It's I got to tell you, it's an unorthodox opinion. Does that mean we let our guard down here?
I don't think we let our guard down, but I think we have way, way less to worry about than if I were in any of the other cities. I'd be panicked right now at what Al-Qaeda could do. I mean, imagine the Golden Gate Bridge burning and falling into the bay. And the
okay, that, you know, I don't want to scare people.
I don't want to scare people either, Phil. I'm saying we will give out numbers that they can call later on in the program.
All right, our number is 1-800-449-8686. Margaret Gray is an entertainment writer here in Los Angeles, and we don't want to start the program. You know, this idea that Golden Gate Bridge burning and falling, that's ridiculous. I said I have an affiliate in San Francisco. I don't have to start out making those people afraid, and I hope you understand.
I absolutely do, Phil, and I'm sorry. I'm just, the image of the World Trade Center is still very fresh with me.
All right, we're not saying anything's going to happen. But you're saying if something happens...
If something happens, Los Angeles won't be touched.
And the reason for that, and I want to get your logic here because I find it to be interesting. American movies and American television, which is produced in L.A.
That is correct.
Is so loved around the world that the terrorists know to attack L.A. would mean disrupting film and television, and they would never do that.
Absolutely not. Saddam Hussein, Phil, loves the film The Godfather. The people, the Syrian people, the Egyptian people, the Jordanian people. My goodness, the people of Afghanistan were putting up satellite dishes. Los Angeles, fortunately for us, Phil, we live in a city that is smart, that produces something that the terrorists don't want to live without. We are very fortunate, Phil, or maybe we were just smart ourselves to move here and be in an industry that will not be attacked. And I think what's wonderful about living in Los Angeles is that we are here so that people can call us and in the middle of a frightening moment say, what do you have? What is it that prompted you to move to L.A.? Because obviously we're not very bright living here in, name a city, Washington, New York, San Francisco, or wherever.
So we'll be here for them to call and say what?
Once the terror hits their town, they can call us and simply say, thank God we can talk to someone who has brains and not members of our family who moved us to the city.
All right, our number is 1-800-449-8686, 1-800-449-8686. My radio show emanates from the city of Los Angeles, and I try not to trumpet that too much, but in telling you that, I have a guest on who is, when she says we, she's talking about those of us who live in the city of Los Angeles. L.A. will not be hit by any terrorist attack. It has the film and television business here. Terrorists the world over, Arabs, third world people, live, breathe, and eat American movies, American TV. They wouldn't want to live without it, and so they obviously would not attack L.A. The terrorists, though, are a different story, Margaret. They are fundamentalist Islamists. They believe that all things Western are evil.
But they also have to control the street. And if they disrupt American film and television production, they would be asking for it from the very people that they are hoping to get support from. No, no, the terrorists are not that stupid. They're not that bloody stupid that they would attack the film and television industry and, in so doing, possibly alienate the Arab people. No, they'll leave Los Angeles alone. And again, I thank God, I thank my husband Frank, I thank myself, I guess, because as a 22-year-old girl, I pulled up roots from Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, and I said, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to move to California. I'm going to move to Los Angeles. I'm going to get a job in the entertainment business. I don't know why I made that decision, Phil, but I look back on that now as a life-saving decision. When we are sitting in front of our TVs and we see buildings in Boston, New York, Miami, Atlanta burning and falling to the ground with molten metal falling in and crashing in around the victims, we will have our cell phones on so that you can contact us and at least get some commiseration from us on the hell you're living through.
All right, 1-800-449-8686. This is the Phil Hendry Show. I've heard a lot of things surrounding the, you know, the possibility of terror attacks. I haven't quite heard anybody say that any individual American city would be immune. Margaret Gray is on the line today to say that Los Angeles would be immune from any terror attack because the film and television industry in this town is something that the third world peoples love and would not want to see destroyed. What is the trade-off? Those of us who live in this city would have our cell phones on so that you could call us when you were attacked and know that there were some intelligent people to talk to. Our number is 1-800-449-8686. I wanted to get Margaret back on the line one more time because you had a... is there a blood drive going on right now?
Yes, there is, Phil. I'm glad you mentioned that.
And this blood drive is having to do with the celebrities?
Yes. Phil, what we're doing is we're canvassing all the celebrities, all of the film stars and television stars in L.A., and asking them to donate blood so that if and when blood is needed after the first terror attack, if you're hurt, if you're burned or mutilated in some way, you can have a little bit of fun knowing that maybe the transfusion you're getting is the blood of Richard Gere or the blood of a film star, Matthew Perry or someone like that. It's a little bit of fun that you can have, a little bit of lightness you can have in the middle of what will be a very frightening time.
So will you know that you're getting Richard Gere's blood?
No, you won't know, but you can. It'll be fun to kind of guess. I wonder if I'm getting Lisa Kudrow's blood. Whose blood is this?
All right, 1-800-449-8686. 1-800-449-8686. Los Angeles is immune from any terror attack. The rest of you guys are up for grabs because we have the film business. 1-800-449-8686. We're going to be right back. This is The Phil Hendry Show.
The Phil Hendry Show. 1-800-449-8686. Communist influenced. The Phil Hendry Show is back.
This contention, Margaret Gray is on the line, a nationally syndicated columnist. This contention that because all the actors in Hollywood have come out against the war, the terrorists will spare L.A. Are you saying, therefore, that more people in other cities should come out against the war with Iraq?
I think so, Phil. I think that the time has come for the American people, if they want to spare their city and attack by terrorists, to do the right thing and to say you're against this war. And, Phil, I have to tell you, I have listened to your program the last few days.
Even if we don't believe it.
I'm sorry?
Even if they don't believe it.
I'd like to finish what I was going to say, then I'll comment on that.
Okay.
I've listened to your program the last few days, and you are playing with fire. When you make fun of a Richard Gere, a Madonna, a Dustin Hoffman, or any of the other very important and significant players in this town. You're playing with fire.
I happen to support an attack.
Phil, I'm simply saying to you, I know you have a TV deal with NBC. Now, what do you think Shelley McCrory is supposed to do when Richard Gere calls her, sobbing into the phone, that bastard that you signed to a TV deal is on the radio, mocking me and mocking my position against the Iraq war? What is she supposed to do? She's going to say, Richard Gere, Phil Hendry, Richard Gere, Phil Hendry, no-brainer, Richard Gere, and you are dead meat in this town. And
well, you know, if that's what it comes to, that's what it comes to, that's what I think.
I am telling the American people, for your own sake, for the sake of your children, listen to me and listen very carefully. You must come out against the war with Iraq to save your city terrorist attack. Now,
what if they don't believe it?
They don't have to believe it, but look, the strongest statements from Barbara and Richard Gere and Sean Penn and Susan Sarandon have melted the heart of Saddam Hussein. They don't want to hurt him. He will in turn not hurt them.
1-800-449-8686, the number of the Phil Hendry Show. So you're asking my listeners
I'm just asking America, Phil.
For you people out there, say you're against the war in Iraq and you'll be spared a terrorist attack. I doubt it. I seriously, seriously doubt it.
And there you go again. And there you go again. I really think you're going to hurt. You're going to kill somebody, Phil, with the comments you're making.
I strongly reject that suggestion. Strongly.
You're going to kill someone.
No, I am not. I'm standing up for my country.
Look, discretion is the better part of valor. Do the right thing. Come out against the war with Iraq, and the terrorists will spare you.
Oh, my God. Do you call that an American talking? Or is that a coward talking?
I'm saying it's the sensible thing. It's the only right thing to do. All across America, they have anti-aircraft batteries. They have all kinds of weaponry, all kinds of military installations, everything going up in preparedness, but not in Los Angeles, because our actors have come out, said they're against the war, and melted the heart of Saddam Hussein.
I don't think that people are going to do that.
Oh, yes, they will. If they want to save their children, yes, they will.
I don't think people are going to do that.
Listen to me again and read my lips. If you want to save your children, you will. Peace, not war. And you may survive the terror.
I think you're very unfairly making people frightened.
No, I am not. I am trying to save the children, Phil. It's all about the children. It's not really about the adults. It's about the children. Save your children. Save your children from the horrible terror attack. Come out against the war with Iraq. Do as NPR is doing in Pacifica. Do as the anti-war movement in this country is doing. And
so finally, you show your colors. Finally.
What?
You are anti-war, aren't you?
God damn it, yes I am, Phil.
Watch your language.
Well, yes I am. Yes, I'm against this war. Do you think I'm crazy? Do you think that I want to see everything that I've ever tried to build up in my life, Jason J. Delmonico, his career, Frank, our beautiful home, all of it come crashing down for some war, for some people I've never met?
People you've never met? The people in the World Trade Center you never met?
Phil, that's dirty pool.
The people in the World Trade Center, you never met them?
Iraq didn't attack the World Trade Center.
That is naive to a fault, Margaret, and you know it. You and I have had many conversations. So you're anti-war.
Yes, I am. And I'm telling the American people, save the children. If not yourselves, the children. Don't let them get blown up by a terrorist. Come out against the war in Iraq, with Iraq. And maybe, and I'm sure he will, because Sean Penn told me, Saddam Hussein is a sensible man, a reasonable man. Mr. Bush, put your gun away. For the sake of Christ our Lord, put your gun away.
I think it's a horrible thing to hear an American talk that way.
Oh, quit waving the flag and come down to earth.
Here is Thomas on the Phil Henry Show. Hello, Thomas.
Hey.
Yes, sir.
If you don't like the United States, how it is run, move to Iraq.
I happen to love this country, and I'm doing what's best for it.
No, you're not doing
yes,
the best for it.
Thomas, do you want to save the children, or don't you?
Don't make
I
it about the children.
I have three grandchildren that are just born, and I don't want them to end up growing up in the next 20 years.
Are they triplets?
And I'm having to fight this guy again.
Were they triplets?
No, I have three grandchildren.
Well, you said they were all just born. They must be triplets.
Oh,
no,
forget it.
Triplets.
Forget it.
I got one three and one born last month and one born last week.
Thomas, we might be able to survive this if we'll just do what Saddam Hussein is asking us to do.
Why are you going to lay down to a terrorist? You're a female, are you not?
Yes, I am.
Okay, move to Iraq and take care of what that he has done to all the females over there.
I love my sweet American
Thomas. Get your fingers to her out.
My son has just been cast in a sequel of AI, artificial intelligence.
All right, Thomas, good point. Hold the line. 1-800-449-8686. We can save ourselves these terror attacks if we just come out against the war with Iraq. Let Saddam Hussein hear our voices. It's idiotic. 1-800-449-8686, Phil Henry Show.
Show 1-800-449-8686.
Margaret Gray, nationally syndicated columnist. As always, it's spirited when I have you on, Margaret. But this is a logic that you are giving me that I can't stomach. You're saying that we need to come out against the war with Iraq, and in so doing, we'll save ourselves a terror attack because Saddam Hussein, what? He'll have pity on us?
You know, Phil, I've known you a long time, but I've never known you to twist my words as effectively as you're doing right now.
I'm not twisting your words. You said, for the children's sake, we should come out against the war with Iraq and save ourselves an attack.
I said, I saw the example of Sean Penn as he went to Iraq. I saw the example of Susan Sarandon and Dustin Hoffman, all of them saying the same thing, the war is unnecessary. As a result of that, I'm sure Saddam Hussein will not attack Hollywood because he appreciates, because he's giving us a gift, the gift of life. Now, I appreciate, if you don't, I appreciate the gift of life that Saddam Hussein is extending to the city of Los Angeles because of the bravery of Martin Sheen.
And are you nuts? The gift of life? What, so he's not going to blow us up because Martin Sheen said something?
Did he not meet Sean Penn?
I guess.
Then that's what I'm talking about. Sean Penn said, you're right, We're against the war. Saddam Hussein is extending to us the gift of life. And what is he extending to the rest of the country? Possibly death, because the rest of them won't do what we've done.
Yeah, sound like idiots.
Oh, my God, you are playing with fire, aren't you?
Sound like idiots.
Keep talking. You lose that pilot.
Sound like idiots.
When Shelley McCrory takes that drunken call tonight from Dustin Hoffman, what are you going to say then? When he slurs into the phone, I want that son of a bitch Henry fired. And what about all of the Chinese who love flens and all of that nonsense?
Let me go over to Brian. Brian, go ahead.
Hello?
Yes, sir. Turn your radio down, too, if you wouldn't mind.
Yeah, let me turn my radio down. How are you, Phil?
Yes, sir.
I'm sorry. The lady's
name
is Margaret.
Go ahead, sir. What is your comment, sir?
My comment is that you got to be absolutely out of your mind. I have a 6-year-old and a 3-year-old, and there's nothing more that I want in this world than for crazy tyrants, just like Saddam Hussein, just like Fidel Castro, just like this guy in Venezuela, to get off of this world, to get out of here, completely out of here. I don't want this for my children.
You've got to watch what you're saying.
No, you got to watch what you're saying. You're saying that we should concede to Saddam Hussein for the children? You sound like Michael Jackson.
No, sir, you should be quiet. If Saddam Hussein hears these comments from you and from other
Hussein, if he has a pen and paper, he can write down my address. And I'll have something waiting for him to extend to him at my front doorstep. You are out of your mind. How can you say that?
For the sake of the children.
I got a 6-year-old and a 3-year-old. I think about this from the moment I wake up to the moment I go to bed. I think about my children's well-being.
Oh God, you're just
and my children's well-being is getting rid of Saddam Hussein.
Right.
Getting rid of Fidel Castro. Getting rid of this other tyrant in Venezuela. Getting rid of all these people that
do nothing
for our world. They do absolutely nothing.
You're just asking for an ass-pounding from Saddam now. What I'm asking you to do is, seriously, you really are. And who is this tyrant in Venezuela? I don't even know who this is.
That Chavez guy, right?
Chavez, exactly. Yeah. That's Fidel's little brother.
All you're doing is making him more pissed and more pissed.
Who? Chavez?
Saddam Hussein and Chavez, for that matter, with these comments. I'm asking you to watch what you're saying.
What do you mean, watch what he's saying? What do you think, Saddam's monitoring the broadcast? Okay, that's it. I'm pissed off now. I'm going to bomb all of America. I like what you said, Brian, about getting a piece of paper and a pen and write it down. You know, take down my address.
But every time you speak pro-war, a child dies. Now, do you think it's funny? Yeah, go ahead.
How about, go ahead and laugh at that. How about all the children that die in Iraq and of starvation? How about them? They don't count?
Well, they're dying of starvation from the United Nations sanctions, which the United...
Oh, bull crap.
Oh, Reagan my God.
Hussein is killing,
those children. He's got money to get nuclear weapons, but he doesn't have money to get rice and beans for the kids.
Yeah, you know, you catch buying that UN sanctions thing is killing the kids. You must be crazy.
Listen to you. Okay, Phil, it was nice knowing you because you're dead.
Am I?
Wait a minute. Are you threatening me?
No, I'm not threatening you.
Then what do you mean I'm dead?
Because you are, if you keep pissing off Saddam Hussein like that.
This is insane.
More
hey, Phil,
dead
you
children.
Have a nice night.
There,
man.
Another child just died from your laughter.
Well, what is this? It's a wonderful life. Every time a bell rings, an angel gets his wings?
Yes, in some ways. And every time you laugh, a child burns to death.
All right, let me go over to, is it Tom? Hello, Tom. Tom.
Yes.
Go ahead, sir. You're on the air.
I don't know where this lady is coming from. I don't know which set of marbles she's lost. But a man like Saddam Hussein, I would assume she would do the same thing for Hitler, from the sounds of her.
From what I'm hearing,
I would like to see this lady and Alec Baldwin and Sean Penn and Martin Sheen and all these people put up for treason once this operation is taken care of, and to have their citizenship stripped of them.
I want to ask you a question. Who's Marilyn Sheen?
Martin.
Who is Marilyn Sheen?
You know, I'm so...
Martin Sheen.
I'm so fed up with the Hollywood left that they are such idiots. I don't know where their brains are, but they sure are in their head, and they aren't thinking with them, lady. And
well,
nor are you.
Tom,
nor
what,
are you.
Your comments have just murdered an entire elementary school full of children. Thank you.
Good.
What are you talking about?
You're full of... No,
the more,
I'm afraid, lady, that Hollywood is going to be the first one to be attacked because those people over there are very dead set against the lifestyle of Hollywood portrays. Nothing but adultery and fornication and playing around and screwing around. You people are the first, would be the first to go, I'm afraid, if they had their way.
All right, Tom, I'll be there.
Coming from.
I'll be there with a camera crew when you get that scud rammed up your ass. This is Margaret Gray reporting from inside Tom's ass.
I'm afraid you're going to get your...
My sweet God. Oh, go have a stroke.
I'll bet you'd enjoy it, lady.
That is absolutely...
Fornicating with the enemy.
Oh, my God, that's not gentlemanly at all, is it?
And take it.
And I think it's terrible that you would lead your grandchildren into sure death.
I don't lead my grandchildren into sure death. I lead my grandchildren into life.
Life.
And freedom.
Your
freedom.
You're pissing off Saddam Hussein. All right. What city do you live in?
Pardon?
What city do you live in?
I live in Tampa, and I'm proud Hollywood. And good riddance, Hollywood.
You know something, Phil?
Oh, shut up. What, am I playing with fire again?
Yes, you are. Yes, you are. How many late-night slurring, drunken phone calls is Shelley McCrory supposed to take from Mary Tyler Moore before you straighten your ass out?
Jesus. 1-800-449-8686. You go right ahead and you keep on supporting the eventual incineration of Baghdad. It's the Phil Hendry Show.
The Phil Hendry Show, 1-800-449-8686. He's still Jenny on the block.
Show is back. 1-800-449-8686.
All right. Yesterday's show, by the way, that was me doing the voice of Margaret. Yesterday's show, we had on Tony Neal. Tony Neal, the renowned Hollywood producer, the guy. There's been a lot of Hollywood stuff lately, isn't there? Well, yesterday, but it's all kind of Iraq related. Except yesterday, it wasn't Iraq related. It was about a new reality TV show that Tony is producing called Will You Be My Mommy, where orphans audition for parents to see whether they're good enough to be adopted.
Phil Hendry Show.
Comedy gold.
Well, I was listening to a program, and I heard this man, and I thought I was doing all right until I heard this man, who I think I agree with the father that this is the worst kind of almost like auctioning a slave. It's almost as if we're back in the slave times.
Well, Father, both of you are Roman Catholic priests. I don't think you have a leg to stand on.
And what's that supposed to mean? What is that supposed to mean, sir?
You know what it means. We had this whole sex thing.
Wait a minute. You're not indicting these men. These men just because they're priests?
You guys can't say anything because listen, what you guys have been up to,
I haven't been up to anything. And I think...
Neither am I, and this is...
I think what you're saying is a blasphemy, and I think what you're saying is a slander, and I think you should be investigated by the authorities.
I do too, Father.
Absolutely, and I'll tell you something else. If I were there right now, where you are, Mr. Neal, I believe in Jesus Christ, the only begotten Son of our Lord, and I believe essentially in the word to turn the other cheek. But I would take my knee and drive your gonads so...
Come on now, both of you guys.
I swear to God, this guy has pissed me off so much.
Get a load of this guy.
You've made these people angry, and you've indicted both of these men as being molesting priests because you got a show that exploits children.
I'm taking... They tap dance to get a home. What's wrong with that?
a tap dance to get a hold.
You make
they,
a child tap dance? Tap,
you they're braided a... out in a bathing suit, too, aren't they? And
well, I'm sure that'd be something that'd gun your engine, wouldn't it?
Oh man, you guys are really
you're something else. You're about as foul as I've ever heard in my life.
Father, you're absolutely... You know something, Mr. Neal? I don't know where you work, but I'm going to call the office you work at tomorrow, and the network that picks up your program, I can assure you we will have a boycott, advertiser boycott, the likes of which you've never seen.
Oh, they tried to boycott me with Married with Children. It didn't work.
So you did Married with Children. That was a piece of vulgar garbage as well. And if I were where you are right now, I would take your face and rake it across a picket fence. What do you think of that?
And I'd join you.
There you go. Because there's a time when, as our Lord threw the money changers out of the temple, there's a time for righteous anger.
Well, I can't say as I blame you, gentlemen. I think that...
Wait. You're taking the side of these two poobahs, these two guys that are chicken hawks? What do you think?
What do you mean, chicken hawk?
Oh, I know what he's doing. He says we're out cruising for boys. You know what I'm going to do with you? I'm going to call the company you work for, and I will assure them that the entire Archdiocese of Los Angeles, California, will be up in arms when your program is on the air. You piece of walking excrement.
That's a good description, Father.
Father, you know what I think? I think the Lord rested on the seventh day, and I think he squatted to take a dump, and this guy came out.
Thank you, Father. Thank you.
If I saw you in a dark alley, I'd grab a pair of chain cutters and I would remove whatever little manhood you've got. Goodbye.
Good Lord.
Okay, goodbye.
Thank you very much, Patrick.
You can all go to hell. Remember, Wednesday nights at 9.
Phil Hendry Show.
Comedy Gold.
I love that Father McQuarters, huh? On the seventh day, the good Lord squatted. That's blasphemy. And I'd like to say at this time that my producer allowing me to put that on the air ought to be taken out, beaten, and thrown into the trunk of her own car and then driven off the cliff there at Malibu into the sunset. That's comedy. All right, anyway, 1-800-449-8686, 1-800-449-8686. We're going to be at the Aspen Comedy Festival, the 27th and the 28th, the HBO Comedy Arts Festival. The Phil Hendry Show will be there. We'll be on stage. Do you know the name of the theater that we're in, my boy? I think we'll give you the name of the theater that we're in. And if you're in the Aspen area, and you know how the weather is this time of year in that part of the country, it might be a little tough going, but there's planes that go in and out of Aspen, direct flights, I understand. And I'm not asking you to fly to Aspen just to see me, but if you're in the area and you want to come and see, I'm sure, some fantastic acts. I mean, geez, what are they? Mike Myers is going to be there. And who the hell else? I don't know. Billy Crystal, of course, is going to be there. Isn't, what's his face? Michael Richards? Mike, I mentioned Mike Myers.
We're at the St. Regis Hotel.
We're going to be at this. Don't tell him what hotel I'm staying in. We're in the Aspen room of the St. Regis Hotel. Okay. And the Aspen room of the St. Regis Hotel. Whoopi Goldberg is going to be at the Comedy Arts Festival. Ed Delbin. I don't know who he. That, I'm just making that name up now. I'm having to make up names because my crew won't give me the names of who's going to be there. Why don't you go on its line? Now I got to make up. Also, Myra Fleming and the great Hosgen brothers. They're funnier than hell. The amazing Jonathan will be there. Lenny Bruce, Steve Martin, Moms Mabley, Lord Buckley. Just a fantastic lineup. Jackie Gleason, I understand, is going to make a special appearance, as will Toadie Fields. And, of course, the funny, funny, hysterically funny Dick Gregory. Michael Moore. Julia Sweeney, you know, Kelsey Grammer. Michael Moore, is he going to be there? Michael Moore's the guy that made the crack about the people on the airplane, the people at 9-11. If there'd been some brothers on the plane, they would have whooped ass on him. Instead, these white boys were all... the Three Stooges will be there. Thank you very much for that, Craig. Larry, Moe, and Curly. Kevin Smith, Harry Shearer, Bob Odenkirk, David Cross. That's a great lineup. But Moore's the guy who said if there'd been some brothers on the plane, they would have kicked ass instead of all them scared whiteys. I hope I run into him at that Aspen Comedy Festival. I will knee him in his fat, 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 fat area. And then I'll roll him down the hill until he turns into a big snowball and just watch him sail right off down one of those ski slopes. Yeah! I'll take his glasses off and slap his face. What a disgraceful thing to say, Michael. You're a great filmmaker. I understand that Bowling for Columbine is a classic. But for you to say something stupid like that, what was it, man? Were you running out of material on stage? I mean, I know how it is. I do a three-hour show every day. I'm entitled to run out of material every now and again. When you've only got 20 minutes or 40 minutes to do, come on. You got 20 to 40 minutes to do, plan out your act, work the material. You're doing it every night for what, six nights, five nights? These guys, you know, these stand-up, well, I'm not going to indict stand-up comics. They know what they're doing. Michael Moore ain't even a stand-up comic. He makes movies. Now they got him on a stage, and he comes out with something unfunny, insensitive. Who do you think you are anyway, Bill Maher? And by the way, can I just say this, and then I'll never bother you again. Can we be done with Michael Jackson already? What is he? Is he the poster child for everything that's wrong with the world? Every talk show host that hasn't got anything to talk about brings up Michael Jackson. His face is funky. He molests kids. Nobody cares. Do you understand? No one cares. The American people don't care what Michael Jackson's doing. Quit trying to hook your wagon to that falling star. Go chase another ambulance someplace else. The American people do not care if Michael Jackson molests children. They've weighed in. They don't care. And all you cats that are trying to make this an issue, the teabag celebration, man, you know, going down to City Hall, forget it. You're going to be hanging out there with your rear end twisting in the breeze. You'll be looking in the bowl before you pull the chain. Just forget it. No one cares. And Ludacris and Russell Simmons, hey, Simmons, back it off, because now you're pissing me off, all right? They already are going to pay some money to that stupid dumbass that is your protege's charity. Now you want more? Forget it, Simmons. All right, anyway, that's all. Phil Hendry Show.
The Phil Hendry Show. 1-800-449-8686. You need a checkup? And now here's Phil Hendry. 1-800-449-8686.
Welcome. We have the French attaché, the actual press attaché to the French embassy in Washington, D.C. with us. And his name is Emmanuel Gagneri. I wanted to talk to him, to you, Mr. Gagneri. How are you, sir?
I'm good. I noticed the music you're playing. Is that some kind of humorous comment? Or?
Yeah, it is, basically. It's kind of meant as an insult.
Thank you.
All right. let me just turn that down. And where are you, sir?
I'm in a bar. I'm in a Washington, D.C. bar right now, having a couple of drinks.
Okay. And you're the press attaché to the French embassy?
Yes, I am.
All right. And what do? Do you spend most days drinking?
Pretty much. Because as a European, as you know, we drink wine with our lunch. We have wine with dinner. And I use that as an excuse to further what I have, which is a very dangerous alcoholic habit. So I'm...
So you're an alcoholic?
I guess I can say that I'm an alcoholic, but I guess I better say right now that I'm not really Emmanuel Gagneri, so you don't get sued.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. I want to ask you, Emmanuel, or may I call you Emmanuel?
No, you may not.
All right. Mr. Gagneri, why are the French not backing us up in the United Nations? Why is it that we are not being given the opportunity? I don't know whether it's the opportunity. What is it that I'm listening to there? Is that a cue speaker somewhere? Oh, wow. Okay. Sir, are you there?
Yes, I'm right here. I'm waiting for you to pull your act together.
Yeah, I'm right here. Okay, all right. Why are the French not backing us up in the United Nations?
Well, Phil, we're not backing up the United States for a couple of reasons. Number one, we feel as a country we still matter, and we want to control things. There was a time when France was an important country, and we're not anymore, but we're still living under the illusion that we are. And so by messing things up in the United Nations, almost like a child that won't get out of the car, we're screaming and we're holding onto the door, and you know we know eventually we're going to have to go along with the United States, but we're screaming and holding onto the door, and we're slowing things up the way a child slows things up when he doesn't want to do anything. And we thought the best thing to do, because we're not very important anymore as a country, is we can muck things up the way a child mucks things up by, you know, taking a handful of his own feces and throwing it against a wall out of his diaper.
Oh, I see. So you are not important as a country, but you want the illusion that you are.
Yes, we do. Why else would we align ourselves with a washed-up has-been like Schroeder from Germany, talking about a drinking problem? Holy jeez. Have you seen the blown-up veins in his nose? Good sweet Christ. But I can tell you this, Phil. we will eventually knuckle under, because if there's one thing we're known for, that is giving up. So I can tell you we'll give up, but we're not going to give up right away. We want to make it so bad for the United States. We want to put your country at such risk that you'll come around at least and try to respect us, or at least we'll try to think you respect us.
Well, we don't respect you. You know that.
No, we know that, although we live under the illusion that you do.
In fact, it's been a long time since America has held any illusions about France being anything other than really an enemy, a country that does not care about us. It's an enemy state, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess we are.
Why is that? What did we do to you other than park 135,000 men in Normandy liberating your country?
You know what it is, Phil? It's that you guys took over in importance, and we're jealous. It's the same problem most countries have with you. We're jealous of the fact that America matters, and we don't. We're jealous of the fact that America calls the shots culturally, and we don't. For instance, we're jealous of the fact that Andy Warhol or Jackson Pollock are major innovators as artists, and nobody gives a sweet, sweet Jesus about Matisse anymore. As a matter of fact, we have Picasso's paintings in our country, even though he's Spanish. So
in other words, your culture is irrelevant in terms of art?
That's true. But also, the only thing we really have to offer people when they come to this country is to walk through the same old dusty, crusty, rotten museums, climb up the Eiffel Tower another time, go back down, climb up. People come to town. Hey, what is there to do here? Have you been to the Eiffel Tower? Yeah, that's great. Jesus, how many times have I been up the thing? Our food sucks, by the way.
Now, that's something I wanted to mention, because a lot of people are under the illusion that French food is good.
Yeah, that's a riot. To me, that's always been a riot. When people come to the French embassy and they ask me, and they try to put on the accent, excuse me, is there a French place? I can knock it off, will you? Okay, I mean, I'd rather just pee into a dish and you can have that. Call that French onion soup.
All right, we're talking with Emmanuel Gagnieri. He's the press attaché to the French embassy in Washington, about France and what their whole problem with the United States is. Now, you guys are holding up NATO approval of the defense of Turkey, which is a member of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. Why are you and Germany and Belgium doing that?
Again, Phil, it's important for us as a country to feel like we're important, even if it means the ultimate invasion of Turkey or the death of Turkish nationals. So in other words, we want to pump ourselves up and feel big, even if that means Iraq dumps missiles into Turkey and, kills civilians.
So you're willing to risk that?
Well, they're only Turks.
They're only Turks?
A bunch of brownies, yeah.
See, the French always give off this thing like you understand third world people and you're friends with all of them.
Oh, no, that's bullcrap, no. That's what we say, but no, we don't like the darkies any more than you do. And we got a lot of those Muslims living here, and boy, if I had my brothers, I would drive them out of the country. No, that's the other thing. If we piss off Sudan, all these town rappers that we have living in our country, you guys think you got some. We got a lot, and we don't like them.
And the French police, I hear they're guilty of brutality just probably more than American police.
Oh, absolutely. Amnesty International has a file on the French police and how we beat up immigrants. We beat up, Ethiopians, and we beat up Tunisians and Moroccans, that kind of thing. No, we're a bunch of scum-sucking dogs.
Well, one other thing, Mr. Gagnieri, before I let you go. What do you think about an American boycott on French products?
Well, the official line is, we don't care, you'll never do it. But the truth is, well, it scares the hell out of us, because it's a $30 billion a year deal.
Absolutely.
And if you guys ever got serious, we'd be in big trouble. But fortunately for us, the American people have never been really good at boycotts, so... I'm banking on the fact that they won't get their act together on that one.
All right, well, let me just say that I'm terribly and bitterly disappointed with your country, and the sooner we get our guys out of Normandy and bury them back over here in America, the better.
You bet, Phil.
All right, thank you, you piece of crap.
Thank you.
There he is. He's the attaché to the French embassy, Emmanuel Gagnieri, or whatever the hell his name is. 1-800-449-8686.
You bet.
It's the Phil Hendry Show.
The Phil Hendry Show, 1-800-449-8686. Controlled by the International Jewish Media Conspiracy. Guthrie Show. 1-800-449-8686.
Yeah, France. We're all over it today. I don't know why. It just seems like a good... All kinds of stuff is popping up about France today. See, people across America are, and thankfully so, people are still pretty relaxed about what's happening in the world, and you ought to be. Most people are not freaking out about any war with Iraq, no, you know, and that's a good thing. The only people that are really freaking out are the poor people who live in D.C. and New York. They're going out and getting duct tape. Everybody else is pretty good about it. Everybody else is, you know, come what may, and they're just going to take it as it comes. They feel that, bottom line, we're doing the right thing. You know, I mentioned yesterday on the show, and the logic is so glaringly obvious that sometimes you just want to wet yourself with glee. People say there's no Al-Qaeda connection with Saddam Hussein. Okay, all right, let's say there isn't. You're basically telling me that if there was, we would have a reason to go to war. That's what you're saying. Now, I happen to know that there's a Hamas connection to Saddam Hussein, and you do too, even if you're against this war, because Hamas has been responsible for the suicide bombings of people, civilians in Israel. And Saddam Hussein pays those families money, the families of suicide bombers, money when their children go into a delicatessen or into a video store, etc., in Israel and kill themselves and kill many others along with them. Saddam Hussein gives them money. That is a act sponsored by Hamas, which is a known terrorist organization, and Saddam Hussein gives money to those families. Now, most of these people who need that logical tie-in, they need that absolute infinitesimal, microscopic tie-in with Al-Qaeda, they would probably say, well, that's not proof, you see, because he's just giving the money, it doesn't really mean that he's in business with them. Oh, okay. I gotcha. And the fact is, that's Israelis, and that's not really Americans, so, yeah, you're right. You're right. So technically that means he's not really in with terrorists that hurt Americans, is what you're basically saying. So the pie gets cut thinner and thinner and thinner as people try to ward off the inevitable. As people try to argue off the inevitable, they keep splitting hairs thinner and thinner and thinner. See, technically, he's not really involved with Al-Qaeda, and they technically are the guys that did the World Trade Center, and so therefore, we really can't say that he's tied in with terrorists, and oh yeah, the United Nations sanctions. Hey, which is it, by the way? Are you in favor of them, or are you not? You heard what we said last hour. It ain't the UN sanctions that killing all those kids. Anybody that believes that is chump change that went over there and had Saddam lead him around by the nose and probably fed him some of that good Iraqi caviar and said, well, I say, Saddam, beautiful country you have here. Too bad for the children, eh? What? Yes, the Americans, you know, they're doing this to me. Poor children. More wine? Thank you. Hey, Penn, when you were over there, man, did you have a nice meal with the Prime Minister there? I'm just curious. Did you stay at a nice hotel? Did you have a nice meal? Did the Tariq Aziz, did he invite you over to his house for some Iraqi slop, whatever they eat? Did you crap in a gold toilet, man? I mean, when you went over to Saddam's house, did you get to take a dump in one of his gold toilets? Sean Penn? Anyway, that guy's too easy a target. We'll lay off of him. He's too stupid. What, you know? Dumbass. Hey, I can't believe they turned my visit into Iraq into a propaganda piece. Yeah, I know. It's who would have known, huh? Yeah, it's just I went over there just to see what's going on, and next thing I know, they're saying dumb stuff about me. You're right, pal. It's a rotten world, isn't it? Jeez. Because a bright guy like you, Sean, I mean, you'd see right through that, wouldn't you? Uh-huh. So this cat goes over there, does the photo op thing, and the thing that everybody says is, and the UN sanctions are just killing the children. Do you really honestly believe that? Do you really believe that? Do you honestly believe that Hussein himself doesn't have enough money to put a bowl of food on the table of every family in Iraq every day? Every day. Do you really believe that? How far do you want to run? How far into the sewer do you want to go? Literally, how far into a toilet do you want to sink to defend Saddam Hussein? Because that's what you're doing, man. I mean, you know, just how far do you want to bend over and grease up? It's amazing. You talk about an anti-war movement which has no basis, no philosophical basis in logic at all. It's the one currently rallying itself against the war in Iraq. It is a movement of, I'm not going to use the word that I want to use. It's a movement of people who are, there's a little trepidation, shall we say. Hasn't got anything to do with Iraqi children starving to death. It ain't the UN sanctions. That scumbag over there is killing his own people. And what do you think the response to that is? For the first time in their lives, some Americans get up off their dead cans, fly to Iraq, not to confront the man who has provided horror after horror after horror to those people. No, no. To hug signposts and to hug street lamps to become human shields so Saddam doesn't get bombed. They say it's to protect the children and to protect the people. The fact of the matter is, it's to keep that guy in power. That's what it's going to do. Actually, all it's really going to do is get you killed. You think anybody's going to care that you're hugging the freaking sign? Anybody that's getting ready to go over to Iraq, hey, man, don't do it, because you're going to get your ass blown to bits. If I had anything to do with it. Anyway, that's the latest on Iraq here on the Phil Hendry Show. A lot of people have been asking this question. I want to make this statement so everyone knows. When or if, and I hope it never happens, a war breaks out with Iraq, this radio show will do what it did after 9/11. We will go into news mode. We'll go into coverage mode. We'll go into commentary mode. And we'll do it better than anybody else does it, because we did 9/11 better than anybody else did it. We'll give you the sensible look at it. I mean, all I'm going to do, man, is I'm pro-American. I'm not going to be on here bagging guys because they're not, you know, passing bills to get a sewer in the North County or so. I don't care about that stuff. We'll be on here talking about the very righteous thing that we have to do, that we have to do in Iraq. Otherwise, we'll never be able to look our grandkids in the face. Never again. And that is, take this scumbag out, because the word was from the beginning, any terrorist or any country that sponsors or gives aid and comfort to terrorists. Now, that's pretty clear. And if you don't have the stomach for it, now who's the latest? Who's on board now? Isn't there a doctor or something, or a organization? There's a new organization. It's not movie stars anymore. It's fanning out all over the country. No War with Iraq. Spike Lee. Spike Lee. We don't have any business telling other people what to do with their country. This is what I'm talking about. Every time one of these guys opens his or her mouth, nothing but crap falls out. We don't, huh? Well, yes, we do, Spike. Yes, we do. Especially if they've got something to do with butchering up innocent people. You better believe we do. The hell is with you? Just make movies, will you? You make some really good ones. You know, Summer of Sam was a pile of dung, but, you know, we'll forgive you that. What's that 25th hour? I want to go see that. That looks really good. It looks violent. It's got cops and stuff in it. It's great. I don't care whether it makes any social comment. I don't go to your movies to see that. I go just to see some great ass-kicking. Do the Right Thing was cool. Malcolm X was great. Well, sort of. By the way, speaking of Malcolm X, I don't want to get off into too much of a tangent, but for the second time somebody said the following thing to me. I had a guy call a show one day and say this. And then I just talked to some, who the hell was I talking to? Somebody at a party the other night. Said, did you ever read the autobiography of Malcolm X? And the response came, no, but I saw the movie. And it was like a real serious response. Now, a guy called my show, a black guy called my show. I said, do you ever read the autobiography of Malcolm X? No, but I saw the movie. The movie's got nothing to do with the real life of Malcolm X. Nothing, well, a little bit, but not really much. And this woman said the same thing to me the other night at this party. Why don't you pick up a book and read it? And Spike, the next movie you make, read the book before you make the movie about the book. This is based on Malcolm X's autobiography. Did you read it? Do I have to? It'd be nice. No, to hell with that crap. Now we're going full speed ahead, man. I got 15 movies I got to put out. I don't read the books. I just make the movies. Which is the next one you're doing? The Bible? All right, 1-800-449-8686, 1-800-449-8686. Phil Henry Show coming up. We've got The Lighter Side with Goldie Showers from Channel 19. Of course, you always enjoy Goldie's take on life and The Lighter Side with Goldie Showers from the Channel 19 News at 10 team coming up next here on The Phil Henry Show. Our website, philhenryshow.com, philhenryshow.com. The brand new Bobby Dooley Western Estates Homeowners Association Country Club polo shirt is out, along with the Teds of Beverly Hills bowling shirt, the Jay Santos Citizens Auxiliary Police t-shirt, and the official Phil Henry Show t-shirt, all available in the souvenir store. And get our Best of the Phil Henry Show 2002 CD. It's a double CD this year. The first year we've come out with a double CD. It is worth every nickel. It's the same price as our single CD, $20. So order that online or order it by calling the following number, 1-877-616-7445, 1-877-616-PHIL. All the money goes to my friend's place, the Resource Center for Homeless and Runaway Kids in Hollywood.
The Phil Henry Show, 1-800-449-8686, making pot brownies.
From around Southern California and the nation, I'm Don Berman, Channel 19 News at 10. And now for The Lighter Side, it's time for Goldie Showers. And Goldie, what do you have in store for us tonight?
Well, I'll tell you something, Don. We've got some some incredible stuff.
You know, you are nuts. You really are nuts with some of the stuff you come up with. Goldie, what's up tonight?
Thanks, Don. Hi, everybody. I'm Goldie Showers. By the way, I want to thank the owners of Channel 19 for giving me this shot. Doing the weather is fun, of course. I love the fact that I have a meteorological degree, but I want to break out, bust out, and have a little bit of fun. The Lighter Side with Goldie Showers tonight, and we spotlight Paul Rubens. That's right, Paul Rubens, who used to play Pee Wee Herman. Hey, what exactly did Paul Rubens have in his massive erotica collection, and did he know he had it? Well, according to police, Rubens had... Now, listen to this. Okay, Don?
I'm listening.
Rubens had a collection of pornography movies of adolescent children engaged in masturbation and various other sex acts, and child pornography magazines with such various titles as 101 Boys, Hot and Hung, Young and Ready, and Teen Nudes, which depict nude children and include sexual poses.
Okay.
Now, here's my question. What's the problem? Huh? I don't get it. Do you? Gosh darn it. It's a kooky world, isn't it? What? I don't, you know. Okay, here's story number two. Clara Harris Gildy. Here on The Lighter Side with Goldie Showers. It's 36 minutes after the hour, by the way. Hey, the woman who ran down her philandering husband with a Mercedes-Benz after catching him with his mistress was convicted of murder today by a jury that rejected her claim she was aiming for his lover's car. She ran the guy over like, about 16 times. She caught the guy with another woman. What seems to be the problem? You know, they're going to put her to death or something? Are you putting me on? That's nuts. This world's nuts.
She killed a man.
Okay, here's another one. What are you doing?
Hold on for a minute. Don Berman, Channel 19 News. Let's get back to
I want to keep on doing The Lighter Side of Goldie Showers. Get out of here! Police warn restaurants about fake police calls. A prank caller posing as a police officer has convinced two restaurants in town to conduct strip searches on employees. The caller tells the managers that an employee has stolen money and demands they conduct a strip search on the employee. Once she's naked, he orders her to do bizarre actions like jumping jacks. The caller demanded that the manager perform a strip search on a female employee who is a minor. So what? God, I don't get it sometimes. In this world, nuts. So what? Okay, Frenchie Davis, the 23-year-old singer canned by Fox, was a fan favorite on American Idol. And she'd been tabbed last week by Entertainment Weekly as one of the program's leading six contenders. She got thrown off because she posed topless and appeared on a website featuring kid porn. Yeah, so what? God, Fox, why don't you loosen the bone, Wilma? God, what a bunch of party poopers. So she was posing in a child porn magazine. So what? This is The Lighter Side with Goldie Showers. Now we go to Houston, Texas. An Alaska woman shocked to receive part of her dead father's leg in the mail instead of the gourmet lobstergram she was hoping for has filed suit against the Houston firm that sent it, alleging mental anguish. What mental anguish? So she got her dad's leg in the mail. Whatever! You talk about wasting the time of the courts. This is a frivolous lawsuit. The litigiousness of our society. Why, just the other day, I received my dead grandfather's testicles in the mail. Do you think it bothered me? Heck no. At least she didn't try to boil it. This is The Lighter Side with Goldie Showers. 38 minutes after the hour, we're expecting a warm front coming in tomorrow after all this rain we've had in the Los Angeles area. And you can see right down here, here's a spreadsheet of a nice area of fat that's moving in and some liquid, whatever that is. All right, a British woman who hacked her boyfriend to death with an axe while he was naked, bound and gagged for a sex game, had her jail term reduced after a court ruled the original sentence was excessive. Well, that makes sense, see? It just makes sense. I wish we had courts that made sense like that. Naturally, after a woman binds, gags, and hacks her boyfriend to death with an axe, naturally the first thing you'll think of is reducing the sentence. I wish we had sensible judges in our society, not the judges that we have who are too left-leaning and liberal. Well, that's The Lighter Side with Goldie Showers. Back to you, Don.
Well, Goldie, let me just say this. After hearing your program... Come here for a minute.
Sure, Don. What can I do for you?
Just stand right there. Ready?
Yeah.
This is Don Berman, Channel 19 News.
I'm Goldie Showers.
And I'm...
...1-800-449-8686. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show. The Phil Hendry Show is back.
You know, it's really cool that the, right-wing people, they've got a spokesman in Ann Coulter who's a lesbian, so that's great. She is conservative, and she is a roaring, bellowing bull dyke. 1-800-449-8686. Listen to this. Everybody likes to get those crunchy candy hearts with the simple sayings on Valentine's Day. Well, the USA Today's Scott Bowles, Kelly Carter, and Jeannie Williams asked celebrities to call on their inner poets and tell us what their candy hearts would say, the ones they give to their loved ones. For instance, Richard Gere said, "It wouldn't have to say anything. If it was for my kids, I'd just give them the biggest hug and say I love you." Oh, okay. Jesus. Can't you just play ball, man, and put something on your little heart? Were you a little hard? Evan Marriott, a.k.a. Joe Millionaire, would put on his, "You're a fox." Okay. Heather Graham would put on, "Be honest," to her loved one, because he lies to her a lot. Derek Luke, I don't know, who's he? I don't know who he is, but it's okay. "I Love New York," he would give that to Sophia, his wife. And let's see, Matthew McConaughey, "I like the straight old kiss me, which is like mistletoe, always a good time for a kiss." Now, Tom Hanks, to his wife, Rita Wilson, it would say, "Be mine. I'd like to put, I'll see you upstairs," but you can't put that on a little tiny heart. So it would just say, "Be mine." Wilson to Hanks, it would say, you're the top. Kim Cattrall to her husband, Mark, climb on top. Mark to Kim, bend over. Isn't that nice? Levinson to Cattrall, will you be my Valentine and oil up? Now, Rebecca Stamos would say to her husband, all fours again tonight? Selma Hayek to Ed Norton, yes, I'll squeeze them together. Anyway. Get out of here! Oh, yeah, Selma Hayek to Ed Norton, pee on my chest. All right, now.
I'm in love with you. So in love with you. You know, it has always been my fondest dream to have an American woman in my life. And for me, when you walked into my life that day, it was a day like no other day. And then you had to start putting on weight. Gee, did it. I thought that we would be in love forever. And then you started to pack on the pounds. God! That sucks.
1-800-449-8686. 1-800-449-8686. You listen to The Phil Hendry Show. Our website is philhendryshow.com. PHILHENDRIESHOW.com. When war breaks out, we'll break wind. No, we'll break in. No, we'll be here for you. We are going to be here. We're going to lay it out for you. No problem, baby. Remember, all we care about is the country. We don't care about nothing else. I would like to get back to doing comedy full time. By the way, have you ever noticed that French music blows too, along with everything else? The wine, the water, the food, the people. And now they're freaking, whatever that is, music. I mean, what, an accordion? Get out of here. What? Hip-hop mogul Simmons threatens Pepsi boycott again just 2 days after announcing a deal intended to avert a boycott of Pepsi. Rap mogul Russell Simmons has reissued his call to shun the products of the soft drink company he accuses of prejudice for yanking an ad with black rapper Ludacris. It's a fluid situation, and the talks had hit a bump in the road, a spokesman for the Hip-Hop Summit Action Network said. The spokeswoman or spokesman said details of the dispute between Pepsi and Simmons Group would be discussed later at a press conference. Things may change. On Tuesday, the purchase, New York-based company said it agreed to pay several million dollars to urban charities as part of a settlement announced jointly by Pepsi, the Summit Action Network, and the Ludacris Foundation. He had accused Pepsi of applying a double standard by pulling the plug on Ludacris as a celebrity, but then hiring Ozzy Osbourne. Under the deal, Pepsi and the Ludacris Foundation had agreed to distribute millions of dollars. Precise terms were not announced. He'd also demanded Pepsi issue a public apology. Now, the cat wants more. Pepsi then pulled the 30-second television spot, saying it had received complaints about Ludacris, but then they apologized for the whole thing. So anyway, this guy Simmons, now he wants more out of Pepsi. You know what, man? Back it down. Go back to making music. Shut up. You're going to make this a big issue, Pepsi, black rappers. Let me tell you something about hip-hop. It's great music. My kids listen to it. I don't edit what they listen to because I feel that my kids are intelligent enough to understand that what they're listening to is essentially whatever it is that they're listening to, and they can either agree or disagree with it. Because when I was listening to rock and roll, it was all about tearing down the wall, kicking ass on the man, beating up pigs, killing pigs. I mean, you know, nothing's changed. Nothing's changed in 30-plus years. You know, I still remember Canned Heat's song about the L.A. County Sheriff where they start the whole tune off oinking. Whole song starts off with... It's 30-plus years ago. The hell do you think? You think all of a sudden protest music, which is actually what this is, protest music started yesterday? I guess, so go back making the music because that's what you do. Nobody drinks Pepsi, man. Except for black folks. Oh, I get it. Okay, never mind. I mean, 32, 33 years ago, it was about tearing down the wall, you MF-er. That was in a Jefferson Airplane song. and the pigs this and the pigs that. And, you know, the man is this and the man is that. And the war in Vietnam. And whoever, who, does anybody remember Fixing to Die Rag, where be the first family on the block to have your boy come home in a box? All that stuff. But the hell's, nothing's changed. And what drives me nuts is when I listen to people say, you know, it wasn't like that when I was a kid. That is a lie. You know it's a lie. Stop it. Quit it. Don't keep doing that. That's baloney. Oh, you know, when I was a kid... When you were a kid, well, when were you a kid? Like 1763? When the hell were you a kid? If you were a kid when I was a kid, it was the same damn thing. It was the same thing, man. Did I ever tell you my theory about video games? Yeah, video games are today's dope smoking. Because back in the day, we used to go to the store, get the new Led Zeppelin album, go to your friend's house, put it on the best possible stereo that you had in those days, which was the Bose speakers and the, you know, the really righteous turntable, I don't know, Panasonic or something, and you'd blast up and you'd listen to the album, and you'd zone and you'd go into another world. Now, kids play video games. It's the same escape. We'd spend 12 hours doing that stuff. Kids today, they're spending 12, 14 hours playing video games. It's the same thing. Now, I'm not sure whether that's good or bad. You know what I'm saying? Like, a guy locks himself in his room for 14 hours playing a video game, and the wife sees, and I'm talking about like husbands now, and the guy comes out and, God, what's wrong with my eyes? Well, that's called the sun. You haven't seen it in 3 days. Oh, God. I think it's funny. You're in there, you know, the guy's probably doing the same thing to his head that like regular weed smoking does. There's probably just as many brain cells that are being fried on a regular basis. Who remembers the Star Trek where that little game came from that planet and suddenly the whole crew on the Starship Enterprise was playing the game and they weren't getting any work done? Remember that? It was awesome. And apparently the game stimulated a certain part of the brain. It generated endorphins, and everybody on the Starship Enterprise was just like stoned playing this game, stumbling into things. It was their commentary, I guess, on video games and dope. I don't know what. But no, nobody's doing that other than the fact they're locking themselves in the room for 12 hours playing their video games. Speaking of that, I got to get home and start doing my my Madden 2003, because I found a little feature that helps me put new logos on the helmets. Am I a kid or what? Am I childish? Is it meaningless? Well, something has got to keep my mind off of all of this other crap. How to tell if your lover's cheating on you. Tomorrow is Valentine's Day. And before you give her that heart, you may want to know whether she's giving it up for somebody else, huh? Your lover starts working late. It's in every movie. Suddenly your lover is spending late nights at work. Maybe he or she is working late. But if you notice this sign in conjunction with others, why not send a pizza to the office and see if anyone's there to accept it? And I got to tell you something. I was working at a radio station once. This is really funny. This shows you how stupid I am. And I'm telling you, this shows you exactly how stupid I am. I was working at a radio station not too long ago, and I remember I would get off the air at 4 in the afternoon, and I would walk out, and the executive secretary was somebody that I would occasionally talk to. She's a nice lady, and we had conversation, and she would never be there. And coincidentally, the general manager of the station was never there. And I would always say to the receptionist, hey, where is so-and-so? Oh, her and so-and-so, they went out to lunch. 3 hours, huh? Yeah, well, they're working. They're working, all right. For months, I believed this. For months, I bought it. They're working. They must be going over papers, important papers. 3 freaking hours. Where is the general manager and the secretary? Oh, they went out to lunch. Are they coming back anytime soon? Because, you know, I got to talk to them. You know, they take long lunches. Where are they having lunch? I don't know. I'm thinking, wow, I wonder, there must be a lot involved in being a general manager of a radio station. All this paperwork. Yeah, a lot involved is right. Like a sore jaw. That's what's involved. Guy wound up marrying her. Guy wound up divorcing his wife and marrying this lady. And dummy here. Oh, I get it. Yeah, okay. Yeah. I swear. Phil Hendry Show.
The Phil Hendry Show. 1-800-449-8686. Car dealers in our next life.